Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I trust NCX. They've helped over 20,000 landowners across America earn more than $20 million through programs like carbon credits, wildlife habitat enhancement, solar energy development, sustainable timber management, and more. Want to see what your land could be earning? Visit ncx.com and discover the funding opportunities available to you. And as a Great Days Outdoors listener, you get your first month of NCX membership free. Just use the code GREAT at checkout and unlock the potential of your land today. Again, that's the code GREAT at ncx.com. Air Medcare. Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, they're the largest air ambulance membership network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.deals/airmedcare to enroll.
Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com.
I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-hosts, Butch Theory and Nick Williams. Guys, today we're going to be talking about how to successfully not only harvest acorns off your property, but then plant those acorns and produce oak trees down the line. This is something that is very interesting to me from a 50,000-foot view. And here's my personal reasons for that. On my property, what I want to provide is a year-round food source, cover source for lots of different types of wildlife. If the animal chooses, I would like for them to have everything they need from a food perspective, a cover perspective, a way for them to raise their young, a way for them to evade predators, a way for them to feed and get enough nutrition that they don't need anymore. Just inundate them with nutrition and also keep them on my property, used to my property 365 days a year. Teach their offspring the same thing. And one of the things I've noticed over the years on my place is certain oak trees, if we're talking about hard mast and soft mast trees, certain oak trees, certain persimmon trees that I have, they drop at different times of the year. So like I've got white oaks that are dropping right now, first couple weeks of bow season. My persimmons are already dropped. They're gone. They were nailed in the month of September. My swamp chestnuts are going to drop in November typically. And so what's happening is those animals are changing. They're, you know, the pigs, the deer, the turkeys, they're on various different things and they're constantly moving from other food sources. And what I want to do is start to propagate some of these species that have various drop dates.
Yeah. You can so spread it out.
Spread it out, right? Because sure. When I take something off the plate, like for instance,
give them something else.
Yeah, when I plant my fall food plots, like, well, right now there's a period of time, and I hope to get away from this, but right now there's a period of time where I have to herbicide those food plots and kill off that vegetation that I grew for them during the summer. Well, what do they have at that point? Like the food plot isn't providing. Is there some soft mass that's providing or some hard mass that's providing during that time? And just that kind of mental thought process year round. And like Butch, I know at y'all's place, y'all's like your sawtooths, they drop real early, right?
Very early. Yeah. Early bow season kind of seems like sometimes right around the opener, they start to go away, unfortunately. But yeah, they definitely drop very early.
Yeah, and so I think, on y'all's perspective, that's a good thing in the sense that it brings animals maybe that were on a neighboring property, like they're coming in and they're eating those sawtooths before the season. You got to get up there and provide something for them during the season to keep them hanging around. Nick, you've seen the same thing in the swamp, right?
Yeah, definitely. I've seen, like Butch said, there's years where some acorns are played out by the time opener hits. Right now, where I'm at, the overcup acorns are really hot, or they were last week. If I go out this weekend, they may be played out and it may be
Might
onto a
be
different
different, yeah.
species. Yeah. And then later in the year, December, January, your white oaks are played out and you're doing red oaks. And I'll be interested to hear what Ian has to say. I had a big hickory tree that we had to cut down in the yard and it left an empty space. And I've been thinking about planting a tree. And I've actually got a favorite tree on a little swamp ridge where I've shot ducks and shot deer, taught my dog to retrieve. That's where he fetched his first bird. And I've entertained the idea of trying to get some acorns and cultivate some seedlings and just have a chip off the old block,
That's cool.
And yeah, so I'll be curious to see what we can learn about some hands-on information about planting oak seedlings.
Yeah, me too. And let's not forget, the last couple of years, there has not been many acorns, and my
Right.
sawtooths have not dropped acorns in 2 years.
Right.
Not all of them, anyways. And yeah, my brother actually does this. It's kind of a little project for him and his kids. He's got, I don't know, 15, 5 gallon buckets that he brings up to the camp and fills them with soil. And him and the kids will harvest acorns from the sawtooths and plant them, and then they'll try and plant them next spring, when they get 6, 8, 10 inches tall. And so we just kind of keep it rolling and give them back. We've probably planted, man, there is no telling, hundreds of sawtooths over the last 20 years doing that. So be curious to see, get some pointers from me and see if we're doing it right, because there's obviously some deaths there, have some casualties. So definitely want to pick his brain and get to do it right.
Yeah, and not only thinking about that, I've noticed, obviously, I think most hunters know that deer and turkeys, all different types of wildlife, put a preference on the white oak varieties that are out there. But then, like my turkeys, I have a lot of red oak species on my property, and turkeys love them, and they provide acorns not just in the early part of the season. That's that winter forage for those turkeys in my hardwoods. It's a big important food source for them. The interesting thing about Chestnut Hill is they provide a bunch of different varieties of
Yeah,
trees
all of
that
it,
drop at
persimmons and
various times, soft and hard mast. And that we're going to be talking with Ian Wallace today from Chestnut Hill, really to get the lowdown on what we need to do when harvesting, what we need to do when, getting these acorns to germinate, and then also what we need to think about post-planting to make sure that these trees make it. So, Ian, like I said, the goal, at least for me on my property, is I want to provide, we're talking about food. I want to provide food that will not only attract wildlife, but hold wildlife on the property. And part of that scheme is hard and soft mast. You guys produce both. Today, we're going to talk specifically about hard mast, oak trees and acorns. How much time can someone who has the ability to manipulate their landscape, how much time can someone expect to really attract and hold wildlife throughout the year on hard and soft mast? I mean, can that be a 12-month out of the year type of goal?
Yeah, I think realistically, someone can, especially in the South, have mast, hard and soft mast available on their property almost 12 months of the year. Now, of course, there's going to be some sparsity in the wintertime, but citrus is something that you can grow in the South. And we have a citrus grove on the farm, and the deer just go haywire for it.
Oh,
And
wow.
unfortunately, we don't really have any use for it. We're not using it for anything in particular. It's just for fun, and we don't manage it much, so the wildlife manage it for us. But starting in the winter, you have citrus, and then as you go into the springtime, you can start to have mulberry as early as March. I mean, I've seen mulberry on a warm year here in the South just produce all year almost. But they can start as early as February, March in the South. And then loquat in the South start to produce pretty early too in March, April. And then as you get into the springtime, when things start to, come out, April, May, you start to have peaches, plums, and then into the summer, blueberry and different shrubs throughout the summer months. And then, as you get, into like that later summertime, you start to have, you can have pear starts to come on. We have grapes in the south. And then as you start to go into that August time, I mean, things really start going, and you have all your soft mass, persimmon, apple, pear, it goes gangbuster. And then the hard mass starts to kick in, like chestnut. And then the latest thing to start to come is the acorns. So I mean, realistically, there's something on the property all year round if you cater it in the right way. And that kind of thing is just so valuable for, attracting wildlife, because most people aren't thinking about that. And most of your neighbors aren't going to have that kind of food available. And so they're going to come seek your property. And, if you have the room, they'll bed down and stay on your property than your neighbors.
Last year it was particularly interesting to me. Baiting has been legal in Alabama for a number of years now, and I just it's just observation, but what I see most people doing is a few weeks before the season, they're filling up their bait sites, they run them throughout the season, and then once the season's over with, they cut off the food supply because what's the point in baiting if I'm not hunting anymore? When deer season ended last year, my food plots, I would say the attractiveness of my food plots, I bet it tripled in terms of how many deer were using it in the daylight. I mean, I had literal herds of deer out on the food plots, and I think it was because the surrounding properties cut off the food supply and it was just a vacuum at that point. Like they all knew it was there. All of a sudden this feeder that I hang out by isn't going off anymore, and bam, here they come. And I've seen the same thing. When you have the limited resource, I mean, we've probably all sat in a oak flat and watched deer walk past 100 oak trees to get to one white oak tree. It's the one they want. When you've got the limited resource, the attractiveness of that is amazing to me in terms of how far it can pull animals in and how it just holds them. Nick and I were talking about it earlier this week, but like in this time of the year, when you've got a white oak tree that's quote unquote hot, animals just they just they're in there. They get a bite or two, they'll hang out for 10 minutes and pick up a few acorns. They may go off 100 yards, 200 yards max, but they're coming in. It's like having a plate of candy on the middle of your countertop in the kitchen. Like you're in there a little bit and then that wears off and you're right back in there again, Christmas time getting some more. So thinking about oak trees specifically, I know that everybody wants to focus on white oaks because they are so much more attractive to deer specifically. I know on my place, I mentioned it earlier, but like the red oaks, even though the deer are not seek them out the way they do a white oak, it provides a lot for other wildlife, including turkeys, well throughout the season. So, I'm interested in propagating not only whites, but also reds. What are the most common types of oak trees that you see landowners planting, trying to propagate and increase the number of? And then which varieties do you guys offer at Chestnut Hill?
Yeah, some of the common oaks that you see, I mean, all over the eastern United States, there's white oak, overcup, nuttall, chestnut oak, swamp chestnut oak, pin oak, live oak. There's a ton of different varieties of oak. And, like you said, white oak may be a little bit more favorable for the wildlife that you're trying to attract to your property. I mean, deer like it because it's a little more palatable, but I think there's also something to be said for variety as well. One, because they're going to be dropping at a little bit different times, and you're going to, have that window where you're attracting wildlife. But two, just to speak from an ecology standpoint, oaks are a keystone species for all kinds of wildlife, not just deer and the stuff we want on our property. Of course, squirrels and deer and hog and turkey, bear, they all eat the acorns themselves, but the birds have a huge relationship with oaks. I know, gosh, it's like Healthy bird communities really just benefit from high insect populations, and birds can feed hundreds, if not like some species, like almost 1,000 caterpillars to their chicks during the nesting season. So
Wow.
I remember hearing like a stat, something like a million caterpillars a day per square mile for birds,
Holy cow.
to be able to feed, their chicks. So, those caterpillars are gonna house in different oak varieties. And and then beyond just birds, pollinators need these native relationships with all these different oak varieties. So, I think to have a healthy ecosystem on your property, a variety of different oaks is good, the native oaks in your region. So I would say that, and some of the oaks that we offer on the farm, Schumard, we have a few big Schumards around our office that my parents grew, and they're huge. I don't think they expected them to be quite as big as surrounding the office, and they're a little bit they're a little messy when they start dropping. But overcup oak, we do nuttall, dwarf chinkapin is something that's popular. Swamp chestnut, swamp white oak, pin oak, white oak. Something we also offer are sawtooth oak. Now, sawtooth isn't native, but one of the downfalls of growing oaks yourself for your property is that they just take a long time to produce. They can take 10 to 20 years to produce nuts. But a sawtooth can be, 7, 8 years before they start to produce. So, and they're really fast growing trees. So sawtooth is also something we sell.
Very cool. I know you guys are known for the Dunstan chestnut. How does the Dunstan compare to the various oaks in terms of palatability and just attracting deer and wildlife in general?
Yeah, the Dunstan chestnut, and the American chestnut, which was once one of the most, populous hardwoods in the eastern United States before it was wiped out by the chestnut blight. It was a crucial food source to wildlife in the same way that oaks are today. The native chestnut provided the same kind of ecological benefit with the whole ecosystem, of course, not just wildlife. But as far as the chestnut today, and although there isn't the American chestnut, the Dunstan chestnut that we produce, offers, I think, the same nutritional benefit to wildlife, like deer and squirrel and turkey, bear. The chestnut has almost no tannin. I actually like to pick up and eat raw chestnut from the ground as kind of a fun little snack to chew on. I don't know if you've ever eaten acorns, but
Not good. Yeah, they're not delicious. If you go
you
grab
can't
a red
swallow
oak,
it.
grab a red oak acorn and then grab a white oak acorn, and you can immediately tell the tannin difference between, I mean, a red oak acorn will make your lips pucker. A white oak
Yeah.
acorn's much more palatable. And then you think about a chestnut. I mean, it's night and day difference. I would have to think that that comes through to the animals as well.
A huge difference. I mean, they're sweet, and but chestnut also has a different set of nutrition. Acorns are high in fat, and protein, whereas chestnuts have high protein, but they're mostly carbohydrate. And that carbohydrate source is super important, going into the winter months as well, really similar to, like a sweet potato or brown rice. So chestnuts provide, talk about variety. I mention this a lot when I talk about, food plots and just overall ecology. I think variety in nutrition, variety in trees is really important. That being said, there's something about a chestnut that attracts a deer in a different way. I don't know what it is, but they smell that sweet nut from far away.
I am looking forward to seeing it happen. I planted my
Me too.
first chestnuts on my place this past winter,
Yeah,
and
we both did a
I'm gonna
bunch of them.
plant a few more this year as well. The reason why I'm gonna plant a few more is because I put a few in some spots that I wasn't sure how wet they were gonna be. I thought it might work out, and it ended up not working out. So I lost those trees. I got some other spots picked out for them, and I think that that's one of the reasons why I'm interested in oak trees in addition to given the drop date variety, right? Because like a chestnut's going to drop what? Your chestnuts drop September typically?
Yeah, we start to drop probably the end of August. August
Yeah.
20th is kind of when I start to look.
So it's going to provide that really good preseason attraction that I want. Like my food plots aren't quite coming on. They're just getting seeds in the ground in September. They're not providing the draw the way, but that if that chestnut's sitting in that food plot, then it's getting animals in that location. They're going to pick up on those new that new growth in that food plot, and I'm giving them, you know, what they need as we get closer to the season. But I've got some spots. My property is particularly wet. Butch's property has got some wet spots to it as well. And I've got some areas that they are hard to get equipment into when you're typically planting. They're hard to get equipment in there, and you know, so they don't really function well as a food plot. They don't really function well for growing pine trees and being able to harvest pine trees. They're just it's kind of almost no man's land in a sense, and I'm going, it's a perfect spot for a swamp chestnut, you know, because that swamp chestnut's going to be able to tolerate that moisture better than some of the other white oaks, I think. And that's my thought process going into that. So that's my reasons for wanting to plant oak trees other than the Dunstan. Is there anything else that you can think of that somebody might consider wanting to plant oak trees instead of chestnuts or in addition to chestnuts?
Yeah, no, I think that, just oak is a very important, like I said, it's a very important part of the ecosystem, and they certainly are a mast source that can do well in wet, whereas most soft and mast trees don't do very well with wet feet. It's just kind of part of how they evolved was to have drier soil, well-drained soil. And so, those area, those dry, those dead areas on your property where you don't have much mast, it's a great place to plant a swamp chestnut and other more wet resistant trees.
You know, I'll give you some background information and some context before I pop this question on you. So, Joe and Butch have managed property. I'm mainly a public land pounder, and I've got a place that I've hunted for probably 15 years now. And I'd say for the past 10 or 12 years, I've pulled deer off of it every year. It's one particular white oak on a swamp ridge that's surrounded by palmettos. You got a creek on one side, you got the main river on the other, and depending on the time of the year, you talk about oaks being, you know, kind of a keystone species in the environment. I've shot wood ducks. It's where I trained my duck dog to go get birds. I've shot bucks, big bucks. I've shot hogs. I've small game hunted that area, and I've fished that creek up underneath that oak tree, and I've just got a decade's worth of memories. And this past summer, we had a big mockernut hickory in my yard, and it died. We had to cut it down just because of where it was. And now I'm just staring at this empty spot. I'm staring where they mulched out the stump, and I've started thinking, well, it would be cool to go get some acorns off that tree and grow kind of. You know, take the descendants of that tree and put them here in my yard. And I know that it usually starts dropping about this time of the year, so I've thought about going and harvesting acorns. But in a professional's opinion, when's the best time to go out and harvest acorns, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so this is the time of year, right when they start dropping, I'd start collecting. You want to get the fresh acorns as they drop. So I would recommend going out there maybe a couple times a week and harvest as they fall. As they sit, for a long time, they can have issues. And if you can take them and put them into a little bit more of a controlled environment, the nuts will survive for a little bit longer. And there's a lot that goes into it. You can take care of nuts at a very high level, or you can do it at just a really simple level. But as you start to collect it, I mean, the simplest thing you can do is take them and put them into a little bit of potting soil. Put them in a shady area where it's somewhat cool and keep that potting soil just a little bit moist. You don't want it totally dry, but you don't want it wet. And they're just going to sit there and wait, as time goes on, and you can keep collecting it. Some people, may want to take them and put them into like the refrigerator, which is also not necessarily a bad idea. But as you collect them, a common mistake that tends to happen is people put it into like a Ziploc bag, something that's enclosed, and the moisture that builds inside the bag in the refrigerator will kill the nuts because you can't have it be too moist. So if you're going to go that route and you're going to put them into the refrigerator, I'd recommend something breathable that will keep them kind of like, outdoors. I know you guys may have some other questions on the actual stratification and how to keep them and hold them. So I'll save that for a moment.
Yeah, I think we'll get to that. I mean, my thinking is like a lot of times when I'm up under an oak tree, particularly white oaks, 'cause I don't usually pay attention to much more than white oaks, but when I'm up under a white oak, a lot of times I see acorns that haven't been eaten, and I'll pick a few up and I'll notice a lot of them have a hole in them. It is something that caused it to fall, and I don't know if the animals don't like them, maybe they don't taste great, or I'm not sure. But a lot of times those acorns have obviously been compromised by some type of an insect, is my guess, or worm. When you're harvesting, is it just a matter of get a whole bunch of them and don't worry too much about it, like just pick up as many as you can and get them into storage? Or do you need to be making sure these acorns are going to be viable in some way? What are some of the things you would want to look for that would say, yeah, I toss that one?
Yeah, so I would collect basically anything that looks nice and healthy. I mean, you can tell a nut that's a little bit more healthy and alive. A nut is an egg, essentially, right? It's living and it has the potential energy to grow into a whole tree. But it's living and you want to keep it alive. And you can kind of tell that as you pick them up. So try to pick the best ones that look nice and healthy. Sometimes you're going to pick one up that's a little light. I mean, they look like the year after when they're light and hollow.
Empty.
That's
You can kind of
you
push
can
the
easily
husk
crush
into it.
them. You can feel them for sure. Yep, those don't collect those. And then the big thing to look out for is what you said, that little hole, that's a weevil. And a weevil is just, an insect that bores into acorns and then they live in there and they hatch the next year and that's their life cycle. So keep an eye out for the weevils and
And weasels too. I mean,
otherwise
those are
about to
dirty
say probably
little,
weasels as well. Yeah, weasels do. Yeah. Keep an eye out for them. But yeah, if you collect a bunch of unhealthy nuts, like hole with holes in them, and you put them in a bag, let's say with your healthy nuts, and you're holding them for a month or so in the fridge, they can also cause more rot damage that can spread to the healthy nuts as well, or in your pot with potting soil.
I would guess those weevils could potentially be in there too, and like
Getting the other
come
nut
out of one and go into
infest.
the next one.
Right. Yep. So keep an eye out for those. Another thing that you can do if you're really collecting in bulk, and it's not a bad idea to collect in bulk because the more you have, the more chance you're going to have at some healthy nuts growing at the end of this, growing process. But as you're collecting a ton of them, if you want to be really, nitpicky with it, you can do a float test. So you take all your nuts and you put them in a bucket with water, and anything that floats to the top is dead. You just scoop them out, and anything that stayed at the bottom is healthy, and those will be ready to be dried and stored. That's a way you can go about testing if a nut is viable or not.
Yeah, that's a great tip right there.
Is there any merit to picking them while they're still on the tree if you can get to them, or favoring like green nuts? Like if you pick a green nut, will it kind of ripen on its own and be viable the next year, or is it going to not go through the process that it needs to be viable?
Yeah, I would recommend just wait until they fall. One, it's easier on you, and two, they're just maturing on the tree. It's just like, baby inside mama needs to cook until it's ready, right? And it just needs to get as much energy from the parent plant as it can, and then it'll drop when it's ready to drop.
I was talking about in the intro a little bit, my brother and his kids, They've been doing this for years. They've been collecting, the sawtooths that drop, and he puts them in buckets and keeps care of them. And then we'll plant them in the next spring or the next spring, just depending on whenever we harvest them. But it seems like they do pretty good for the most part. There's not a whole lot of casualties, it doesn't seem like. But if we plant 50 acorns, is there a rule of thumb about, if they're viable, good acorns? The float test was a great tip. Is there a rule of thumb on how many you're going to make it to be, big mass producing trees?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think just depends on really a few things. But if you watch them like a hawk, you get confident in your stratification style, then you can get 80, 90% stratification on them. And when I say that, what I mean is when they start to sprout. That's from growing a seed. From seed to when it starts to sprout, you're stratifying your nuts. And there's a couple of things. One, depending on where you hold them, they're gonna start to mature and they're gonna want to turn into a seed. Now, in that process, you could keep them too dry, like I mentioned. And if they're really dry, like if you were to collect them all and just put them, in a kind of warm, dry place, laid out on a mat somewhere, maybe in your garage, they may dry out and not stay alive. Too wet. And some examples of too wet would be, putting them in an enclosed bag in the refrigerator, and then the moisture collects. Or if you keep them like in a pot with some soil or some peat moss, and you keep that too wet, then that can cause rot as well. So those would be your major problems that could cause your nuts to not do well. But yeah, as you I'll just sort of explain maybe the best way to go about it if I were to do it.
Well, you
You know,
do
you yeah, yeah
a
if
lot.
I were to, yes, we do quite a bit. We do it a little bit more with it because we're trying to get like the best take possible, but not all people are going to quite do this. We will float nuts, so we want to make sure we're getting all the nuts that we can, and then we take those nuts and we keep them in cool storage in a walk-in cooler, and we keep them in breathable bags. But our walk-in cooler is built to take humidity out of the air. So it's not like a wet bag sitting in your refrigerator. Your refrigerator is going to collect a little bit more humidity, possibly that way. Ours is meant for doing what we're doing. And then as we are get ready to stratify them, we keep them in the cooler while they're cool through the winter months. And then we take them out and we put them into a peat moss solution, and we bring them into a different cooler that's a little bit warmer. So we have two coolers to do this process. Most people aren't going to have that. And then as they're sitting in that peat moss, a little bit moist, just a little bit of water, and we keep it just at a nice moisture level, they start to sprout. And then as they sprout, we take them out. So a few things to think about, during that process. One, yeah, I guess so that's what we do, I guess, is as they start to sprout, we take out the nuts and we put them into pots, in soil, and we pull them out at just the right time so that the sprout doesn't get too long. And as they get longer inside that peat moss mix inside the cooler, they can break and they can get other rot that infects the sprout. So we try to get them out of the cooler just as they're sprouting, and we take that and we put it into the pot. So yeah, that I guess is some things to think about. But to kind of go back to maybe what I would do if I were not doing this in such like a calculated environment. So what I would do is I would collect your 50 nuts, 100 nuts, and I would probably just keep them in the winter time in a peat moss or a soil mix in a pot. And I would just put them kind of just below the surface, and you can keep them that way. What you want to do is you think about how Mother Nature is gonna, drop these seeds. They're gonna fall and get covered up by the leaf litter, and then it's gonna get cold. So it gets dark, it gets cool, And that's kind of what we're imitating when we do that in our walk-in coolers is it's dark, it's cool. And then as it starts to be springtime, it starts to warm up just a little bit. And so we go into a little bit of a warmer cooler. And then, you know, there's a little bit of wetness, some of the spring rains, and then we take them out as they start to sprout, right? It's kind of like imitating Mother
Yeah,
Nature.
you're mimicking the natural cycle.
Exactly. And so if you were to do this on your own, you can mimic Mother Nature pretty easily by just keeping it outdoors. You know, keeping this little pot of soil out under, you know, in some shade somewhere, keeping it just a little bit moist, and just leave them for the winter time. Now, that's for us in the South. It changes a little bit for guys in the North, where it's going to freeze outside, deep freeze. You may want to bring it inside, like, you know, a garage, maybe
I was
not
going to
with
say
heat
garage.
on, right? A garage or like a little potting shed or something. You know, in the North, the nuts are falling from the ground on their own and they're getting frozen during the winters. So there is some freezing happening. But to protect the nuts a little bit, I would recommend bringing it in inside, you know, some sort of enclosure to kind of limit deep colds if you're doing this in the North.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Whenever you were talking about the refrigerator earlier, that's one of the first things I thought about was you could put them in the refrigerator to protect them from super cold winters if you're a little bit further north, I would assume.
Yes.
So.
Yep. And just make sure there's a breathable bag if you're gonna keep it in the fridge. But you know, as you keep them in that pot outside in the shaded area, just keep an eye on them. You know, make sure it doesn't get totally dry in that soil. Keep it a little bit moist. And over the next couple months, you're probably going to see them start to grow sprouts. And from there, what I would do is take them out as they start to sprout. You don't want to get too long of a sprout that just sits inside that potting soil with all the others, because they can get kind of like entangled around each other. So I take them out one by one as they are starting to sprout, and I would put them into a pot with some potting soil, and instead of out at the location that you want, just because you can control that pot environment a little better than where you're going to be potting your plant. Something else you can do if you want is you there's actually two other things you can do. One is you can collect all your seeds, and you could just go out to your garden or even under a tree somewhere. If you have a ton of seeds, which I'm sure you can find an absolute ton, you know, oaks drop a lot, you can just turn up some soil underneath a tree somewhere, and just they call it broadcasts seeds. So you just put a bunch of seeds in the soil, cover them all back up with soil, and eventually they're just going to do what they do and start to stratify there on their own.
Ian, what would happen if you just gathered your acorns and went to your final resting place where you want this oak tree to grow, put up a tree tube and a stake and put the acorn in the ground right there? What would happen?
You could, and I think at that point you're limiting yourself to that one seed. And you know, maybe a better way to go about that is to just turn up the ground and throw out 100 seeds where you
Okay.
want one to grow. That way, one
You'd
is
have to fence
probably
that
going to
out, right?
grow. Right.
You'd have to fence it out because the deer are going to nail it as soon as it comes out of the ground, right?
Exactly. Yep. So you want to fence that little area off,
That's
and that
interesting.
could be a way to do it, is just to make a little enclosure, and then you turn up the soil and put 100 there and just see what Mother Nature does.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, first time I ever picked blueberries, I remember this. I was out there, you know, on the bush, and I'm picking them one by one, and I'm putting them in my little container. And I remember my godfather, I saw him shuffling around. Like, we got to the spot where we were going to pick blueberries, and he's like, "All right, y'all go pick blueberries." And here we go, and we're off there doing our thing, not making very much progress. And I see him shuffling around his truck. He's getting this, he's getting that, doing this, doing that. And I'm thinking, I'm gonna beat him, you know, like I'm gonna have way more blueberries than him. And he comes out with a bed sheet and like walks over to the blueberry bush and takes the bed sheet, and he's putting it all around the bush and everything like that. And I look over there, and he's just shaking that bush as hard as he can. And I look down, and that white bed sheet was blue, you know, and he was like, "Okay, I'm done." And I remember thinking, Work smarter, not harder. So, is there any way to harvest acorns faster, easier than just running out there and picking up what you can see?
Yeah, I mean, like you just said, you could throw a tarp out underneath the tree, catch them that way.
Just kind of let
You're
it
gonna,
sit. Yeah.
just let it sit for, a few weeks. You're gonna catch a lot of other litter in there too.
Right.
But that or hand pick. I don't know that there's any other ways that I would recommend. I mean, there's some of the
Oh yeah, I've seen those
pecan and
machines.
I mean they
Yeah,
shake the tree and stuff, but that's that's for
that's a good idea. I mean, if you
the
know
big
where that tree's
operations.
gonna be.
What about one of those golf ball picker uppers that they use in the driving range? That'd be pretty sweet.
There you
Yeah.
go.
Well, they make those for
Yeah.
pecans too. It'd probably work
Yeah.
pretty good.
That's right.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. Check out a few of this week's great sponsors.
Simple Pets. From Pradco Outdoor Brands, makers of the Texas Hunter line of game and fish feeders, comes the latest innovation to your pet care. Meet the Blazer Automatic Dog Feeder. Whether you're at home or away, it serves up perfectly portioned meals to your loyal companion. There's no need for a power outlet. It runs just like your deer or fish feeder with a rechargeable battery. And with a 40-pound capacity and a sturdy stainless steel bowl, it's made for dogs of all sizes, indoors or out. Ready to make life easier for both you and your dog? Visit TexasHunter.com and check out the Blazer Automatic Dog Feeder. Your dog will love it. First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender. 157 Outfitters operates out of southeastern Wyoming, utilizing 100% private leases. They offer hunts for waterfowl, pronghorn, white-tailed deer, mule deer, turkey, and elk. Their area is world-renowned as possibly the most consistent quality waterfowl hunting in the United States. For their deer, antelope, and turkey hunts, they are unique in the ability that they can draw a license for you and get you hunting within 1 year. Hunts are operated out of two lodges on the banks of the North Platte River. Firearms, ammo, and a private chef can all be arranged prior to your arrival. Reserve your spot today at 157outfitters.com.
Ian, what about taking a different approach to it? So I've noticed there have been years where I guess when you get a bumper crop of acorns and a lot of the seedlings actually germinate and survive. I've walked through oak flats before here in my swamp, and in the spring you just see a carpet of green, which is weird here because we usually the floods kill off most of the vegetation and we have a pretty open forest floor. But I've seen when you get down and you look at it, you think it's poison ivy or something, and you look down and you see, I mean, it's just millions of seedlings. Is that something where you can just go through with post hole diggers and just start off with a sapling already? And if that's a viable strategy, is there a right way to do that and get a higher success rate?
Yeah, I mean that might be one of the best ways to go about it.
Yeah.
That
Already
was
semi-established.
I was talking and I'd lost track, but I said there's two more ways, and that was the third way that I was going to mention is just wait till spring and see what Mother Nature produced, and you can go back in and harvest those seedlings and put them in a pot. That's one way to do it. You could enclose that and let them grow a little bit longer. I wouldn't let them get too big because at one point, especially if they're that clumped together, like you mentioned, if they're real clumped together, I'd imagine their root systems could get a little entangled. And then when you go to transplant and pull it out of the ground, you could kill some roots and there'd be some transplant shock. But I would say, in the first few months, get out there and just take a bunch of those seedlings out. I mean, if they're real small like that, I mean, you could almost do it with your hands and transplant them into pots with soil and let them grow from there. Because that way you can take a pot and you can control that environment and grow them out a little bit longer until they're healthy, stronger, and then you go plant where you want to plant.
Nick, you're trying to take the lazy way out. I see.
Makes sense.
Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah,
That's a smart way to
God's
do
got
it.
a pretty good plan. I guess the only negative to that one is you just don't know. Like, you can guarantee if you go harvest the acorns, you got control now. If you wait, well, you may have a flood. The deer may just hammer them. I suspect that's a lot of the reason why in a lot of the parts of the coastal plain, you have a white oak here or there, is that they have a hard time just getting an
Establishing
acorn
and
to not
growing.
get found the
For
way
sure.
that the wildlife favor them. Thinking about this, if we're out harvesting this fall and we do what you've described previously and we get that sprout next spring, are we going to then need to care for that oak until the following fall or the following winter to be able to put it into its final place? When it comes to ideal planting times, I mean, I know we planted our chestnuts in February last year, that late winter dormant time frame. Is there an ideal time for oaks? And then on top of that, like, what do we need to be prepared for in terms of caring for that acorn and then ultimately seedling to get it to where we put it in the ground?
Yeah. So once you've, done your sprouting and you have some seedlings that you have in a pot, I would recommend getting them into a pot. It's just a controlled environment. Once you get the acorn to grow and you have a little seedling growing in a pot, or if you were to remove a seedling and put it in a pot and then, have a little pot with a seedling, I would recommend growing that seedling out at least a couple weeks, a month or two before you put fertilizer on it. But what's great is you can then put fertilizer in that pot. You get to control the moisture instead of waiting on the rains. You could take these little guys home probably in the back of your truck and keep them just like outside your front door. Keep them watered. And I would recommend trying to wait until you have at least, 18 to 36 inches of a tree with a nice little root system. Of course, Mother Nature does it all the time and it grows. There's big trees that grow from the ground. But, of the thousands and thousands of acorns that drop from a tree, I mean, you see how many actually grow to
Right.
maturity, not that many. So it's easier to get your hands on it and you can control how much water you put. You grow it out to a healthy tree and then you transplant it. And I definitely think one of the key parts of that is to have a healthy root system inside that pot. You can get a little tiny pot. You only need, less than a quart sized pot, and you can buy that at any garden center store, I would imagine. And you want to try to see the roots expand and fill that pot so that when you pull the seedling up and out of it, the whole soil container comes out with the roots, and you can see the roots kind of starting to touch the edge of the pot. And those little feeder roots, those are what are going to help a tree grow to maturity, get water and everything. Whereas if you have a little measly root system and you try to transplant it, then you're not gonna have a good chance with that tree.
So, Ian, like I mentioned earlier, I've got some wet areas. I noticed that my swamp chestnuts do really well, obviously, along my creeks. And, my whites will be, I wouldn't really say necessarily an upland habitat, but it's closer. My property has bottomland in the middle of it and then uplands on both sides. And, so as I get closer to the uplands, I start to see white oaks and then more red oaks as I'm getting closer and closer to those upland mixed pine hardwood habitat. In my bottom land, I'm seeing white oaks, and then the further I get down the slope as I get towards the creek where there's actual, water inundates, that's where those swamp chestnuts do really well. And so I've got a couple spots on my property that are they just kind of stay wet. And that's what I was thinking is like, hey, I can go grab a swamp chestnut and put him down in there in that wet area. And that's gonna, these areas are specifically along the edges of a couple of food plots. And I'm thinking like, well, that's gonna be providing hard mast for animals in addition to my food plot. And it fills up a void where, that I'm otherwise right now not able to do a whole lot with. It's not providing a ton. So when it comes to choosing a location and also thinking about competition, like you were talking earlier, we were saying, you know, one option might be to just go harvest a bunch of acorns, fence out an area that won't allow you know, animals to get in there, and just throw them out there and let Mother Nature do the work. My hang up with that would be, I don't want too many trees together competing for the same resources. So I would like to plan my spacing and just get it just right and have a more controlled environment. So thinking about location and thinking about spacing, how do you choose the right spot and then pick the right number of trees?
Yeah, so one thing to think about when planting is you want to make sure that your oak is close enough to other oaks that it's going to have a pollinator. Now most of us have enough oaks on our property that it's not going to be an issue. Oak species do pollinate each other. So a white oak's going to pollinate a swamp chestnut oak. So keep that in mind if you're without oaks for quite some space, then it would be important to have another tree. But as far as planting goes, if you know what the moisture level of that soil is, but that's really important to take a look at for, a lot of people, they don't realize how wet their land might get certain times a year. And if you have standing water and it stays moist, there's a lot of varieties of oaks or any mast that won't do okay in that area. And so you want to make sure that if it doesn't do well in wet soil, you want to find a well-drained area to be able to pot or plant certain types of mast. But yeah, another thing to think about is light, sun. I mean, all mast trees, soft or hard, do best with full sun. Now, is that feasible all the time? No, but full sun is best because that's what's going to give energy to not just mast eventually, but even to grow your tree in the early stages. Oaks sometimes can be a bit slow to grow. And so any bit of energy that you can give them is helpful. So definitely keep an eye out for at least an opening somewhere to if it's fully shaded and fully wooded, it just any species is gonna have a little harder time growing, in the long term.
That sunlight component is incredibly important. We've got like I was mentioning, bottomland habitat on my property, and my forester and I right now are looking at doing some patch clear cuts in these hardwoods to regenerate oaks. We've got, like a lot of hardwood stands across the south. My property at some point a long time ago was high graded. Somebody came in and took the best timber and left the worst. And so I've got a lot of birch. I've got a lot of sweet gum. I've got some oaks, but I would like more. I would like to try to develop more in that stand of trees. And, I'm very hesitant to get in and mess with those hardwoods, because I know that that's kind of a, that's it for me. Like if I mess it up, I don't get to see the result of what happens, and I'm really making a decision for my boys or, whoever the next owner of the property is, if they piss me off and I don't give it to them. But, like when it comes to thinking about those patch cuts, like we're having to be very specific about how big they are. I believe if you're wanting to get good oak regeneration, what I'm seeing as far as recommendation is like a minimum of 100 yards or so gap to allow enough sunlight to get in there. Otherwise, you're going to start to get more of the shade tolerant species like the sweet gums and the birches and those other species that don't really do a whole lot for the kind of wildlife that we're trying to attract. So I think that that's particularly important. And if you can pick out an area where that tree is getting good sunlight, like you said, that's going to be the best scenario. The other thing I think about in those hardwood areas is I've got just a lot of deer and rabbits and birds, and I mean, it's just a constant parade of wildlife coming through there. What do you do to protect these young oak seedlings once you get them in the ground?
Yeah, so that's, I think, one of the biggest competitors to a young tree is, you know, different varieties of trees, I think, are sought after by wildlife more than others. I know, you know, fruit trees just get eaten up by deer. Chestnuts, they like chestnuts too. But any tender new growth is going to be a great attractant. And then also just a young tree in general. I mean, bucks just love to get in there and mark their territory and shut them down. And it's a big problem. You know, we grow trees. So we have a big problem with deer coming in and messing up our production. Anyway, the best way I would recommend is to get some fence posts and some 6-foot fencing. You know, something thick. You know, if you want to ensure that this tree survives that you're planting or your few trees, you know, you can fence each tree off, maybe even that little area off for a few years. But if you're going to fence, you know, a single tree off, you'll get, you know, 2 fence posts for either side of the tree and you wrap some fencing around 6 foot, you know, at least to the browse line. And then once that tree grows up and above that browse line, it's safe. But even a, you know, a young tree, 5, 10-year-old tree can get some pretty serious damage. So keeping that fence around it for a long time is going to help.
It's important to consider, yeah. You know, you don't really think about, like, you kind of figure once it's up head high and making its own way, you just, oh, okay, it's good now. But no, it sounds like this is quite the endeavor if you're trying to get an oak tree to maturity.
And then something else for a young tree that helps a ton is to have a grow tube. So that little seedling tree is very tender. And, you know, even mice get in there and kind of can nibble away. Rabbits can get in and chew at a young, you know, tender wood like that. So a grow tube is great to protect for, you know, the first 3 to 5 years to keep that grow tube secured.
I would assume that grow tube kind of helps them go straight up as well. Does that help?
Yeah,
at all?
You can keep them staked with a bamboo stake in the grow tube. You know, you'll secure the grow tube with a bamboo stake and tie that around the tree as well. And that'll help the tree to grow upward.
And you mentioned a few minutes ago about the kind of the cross pollination or the pollination of tree to tree. I know whenever we were planting the Dunstan chestnuts, we did a podcast on you about, you know, how to plant them, where to plant them, when to plant them. And you were telling us that there needed to be, you know, a certain number of chestnuts in an area so that they could do their thing. And you said that oaks pollinate other species of oaks. But if, you know, if you're planting a couple of these acorns in a place where there's not many oaks or, you know, away from a lot of oaks, how does that work with oak trees? Do you need a couple in a certain area to be able for them to do their pollination thing?
Yeah, I would recommend it, planting with a couple others as they grow. Now, for chestnut, you know, you see flowers very early. I mean, 3 to 5 years, you're going to start to see flowers. And at that point, the tree's so small that it's only going to have, I mean, you could have just a couple catkins, which is the name of the chestnut flower. And those couple catkins aren't producing very much pollination. So it helps to have as many around it as possible. You know, three, we say you only need a second chestnut to be able to pollinate, but we recommend 3 or more in an initial planting site because there's just not that much flower happening in the beginning. Now, as they grow, you know, 5 years, 10 years old, there's going to be a lot of flowers and that's not going to be so much of a problem later on. Now, oaks aren't going to flower for quite some time. So they're going to grow and be pretty large before they start to flower. So, you know, probably just one other oak, I would imagine, would be sufficient. But, you know, we say, you know, 30 to 50 feet spacing to get, you know, sufficient pollination in early years. You know, realistically, I mean, for an oak, 50 to 100 is probably even okay. But if you're starting to see, you know, 400 yards, further, you just may not have sufficient pollination. But that being said, you'd be pretty blown away by how far trees can be pollinated. I mean, up to a mile away sometimes, some pollinator species can do some cross-pollination. But we're talking about trying to get as much mast as possible.
Right,
so the closer you plant everything together, the better, because that's going to give you the cross-pollination you need.
And to go back to something you said previously, just to clarify, one of the reasons I feel like, you know, buying a seedling from a nursery like you guys is an advantage is if you're trying to develop a species of oak or fruit or no matter what you're trying to do, you're trying to develop something you don't have. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I've got these white oaks and I've got these swamp chestnuts, but if I wanted to go after an overcup, maybe like Nick has in the swamp near his house, so that I can get an even earlier drop. Or maybe I wanted to go after a nutall, which maybe I've got a nutall that I haven't found, but there's no reason why an overcup or a nutall wouldn't be in my neck of the woods. I just haven't found one on my property. Well, maybe I'd like to mix it up and give it some more variety. I'm not going to be able to go collect one of those off my property that I'm aware of and propagate it myself. So if I, let's just say I go and I'm trying to plant overcups or my whites or my swamp chestnuts, if there's one of those close, that is going to be able to pollinate, or do I need to make sure I've got three or five overcup oaks fairly close to each other?
Yeah, oak varieties are going to pollinate each other.
Reds and reds, whites and whites.
Correct. They, you know, for instance, yeah, I mean, yeah, our persimmon varieties, let's say, we have 10, 15 persimmon varieties, they all cross-pollinate with each other.
Gotcha.
They're different varieties, but they fertilize each other. So that's sufficient to have different oak varieties on your property with only one nutall or overcup, like you're saying.
Gotcha.
If you know you have other oaks around.
Gotcha.
That planting site.
That's interesting, because like you say, you could go through and say, using the persimmon example, like I could pick your lineup of persimmons to be able to get a persimmon drop as in as broad a range of time as possible, but I could still just put one persimmon. Like if I wanted a late drop, say I want a late drop persimmon in the middle of a food plot, because I know it'll drop during hunting season, but I've got persimmons on the property already. I don't have to go buy 10 of those. I could buy one for every food plot and make sure it does well, and it's going to get pollinated by the persimmons I've already got.
Yeah, that is true, as long as they're female.
Uh-huh.
Persimmons for a different, I guess, conversation, but persimmons are real interesting with how
we'll
they have male
we gotta
and female.
We got to do the
females.
Persimmon podcast next.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
And I feel much more comfortable in my ability to propagate a couple of seedlings from my backyard. You've done a really good job walking through how y'all do it and then how a layperson like myself can kind of backyard brew it. I know you do this for a living. You walk people through this process for a living. Where do you see most people mess up the process? It's a simple process, but if there's a way to screw it up, I know I'll find it. So I try to, before I start a project, figure out where I'm going to mess up.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say the oversight, watching it frequently. That's the easiest way to mess up any kind of plant care. You know, it's funny, I run a nursery, and I grow trees pretty good, but I kill a houseplant pretty frequently because, you know, you just walk by it on occasion and a week goes by, you didn't water it, and bam, you know, it's dead. And it's that kind of thing that, you know, you go a week or two and you don't check, you know, the pot that you had with, you know, a handful of oaks and oak acorns in it. And suddenly it's too dry and they all die. Right. Or same with putting it in the refrigerator in a bag. You put it in a refrigerator and then you come back and it's just wet. It's too much moisture in it. And you forgot it for 2 weeks and then the nuts are all dead. Right. So I would just say frequent attention and you should do great. That being said, you know, you got to also remember that this is Mother Nature that we're dealing with. And, you know, even as the experts that we are, we have issues that crop up on occasion. Sometimes seeds just don't stratify that well. We've had times when we go through our just protocol that works year by year, and we get a collection of seeds that just don't grow that well. Maybe our take is 80-90% most of the time, and we get 40% take or less, and that happens. It's trial and error. It's a willingness and an interest, in doing this. And I think at the end of the day, it's gratifying. It's cool. It's fun to watch things grow, and then you get to put that out on your property. And then 20 years from now, here's this tree that's, 60 foot tall. And I mean, it's a pretty cool legacy to be able to leave.
Yeah, it's very cool. I've enjoyed, doing that with my brother and the kids, and you've definitely given us a lot of pointers for making those better and making sure we grow more trees. We definitely appreciate you being on today. If people want, I know you guys have a ton of awesome resources on your website that walk people through a lot of what we talked about today, as far as when, where, and how. If you were to point people to those resources, where would you want them to go and check out Chestnut Hill?
Yeah, if you want any information on planting and planting care, you can check out our website, chestnuthilloutdoors.com. But our learning center on the website has everything from soil information and planting and care in the early years. So our learning center on the website is a great place to go.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors, Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Bucks Island Marine. At bucksisland.com, you can check out the full list of inventory from new and used bass, pontoon, and bow rider style boats, new and used motors, as well as kayaks. They love trade-ins, which provides a steady stream of used boats, and they can rig your boat at their 18-bay service department or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians, so visit them at 4500 Highway 77 in Southside, Alabama, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Guys, I was sitting in the tree stand the other day and was looking at this wet area I've been talking about on the edge of the food plot going, what am I going to do? I about got my tractor stuck in there trying to plant it for a food plot. I went in, and went in broadcast seed after that with a hand spreader. And then we had Hurricane Helene come through and it dropped so much rain that it inundated and it killed all my seed. And now it's just this big old mud hole, unsightly. I don't know if it's ever going to be viable as a food plot. And I was sitting there looking at it going, that'd probably be a good spot for one of those swamp chestnuts that are up in the middle of the property. I wonder if I could run in there and get some acorns and propagate them myself and do all that. But after listening to Ian talk, like, it's awesome that you, I mean, you can, if you just go back and listen to what he said, I can go, definitely go in there, get these acorns, but it's going to be a long time before I go to having an actual swamp chestnut acorn fall out of that tree on the edge of that plot. If I go do this myself, that's one of the benefits of working with somebody that's, in a nursery, is you can go to Chestnut Hill and get yourself a 5 year old swamp chestnut right now, and you're that much closer to having acorn production. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the DIY aspect and that's fun. And there's some value in that too. if you enjoy that. But it's good to know that there's an option for you if you just either want some, you want a variety you don't have access to, or you don't want to babysit an oak seedling for a
Really long time.
year before you get it in the ground, and then 4 years out on the property.
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned, it's been fun doing this, but two of the things that I definitely picked up from Ian today was the float test. I'd never really considered that as far as picking out your best options. That's really cool. And we've definitely been doing it wrong with not letting them get 18 to 36 inches in their own little pot before we put them in the ground. So definitely gonna add that to my planting list.
Yeah, that's when he said 18 to 36 inches. That was the point where I kind of, in my head, I was like, yeah, the math doesn't add up. If you're going to do more than one tree for sentimental reasons, like if you're trying to plant a dozen of them for mass production purposes, like that's a lot of babysitting. That's a lot
For
of time
sure.
for something to go wrong. And especially you think about the time, and he said right now was the time to pick them. Well, that's great, but it's bow season. So you
You're
got to pick them
right. You want to
in
be out
bow
under your
season.
acorn tree picking your
Check
acorns.
them, once a week, all through deer season, and then
Yeah.
it's a commitment that carries on into turkey season, and it's
Well, I think you're doing it all wrong, Nick. I mean, I'm gonna go as soon as we finish up recording. I'm gonna go tell my wife, honey, I've got to go check on the oak trees. I'm gonna sit in the tree stand all afternoon and make sure that no
Yeah.
deer come in and eat any of my acorns, and then
Yeah, got to guard my acorns.
I'll get down and pick some up so that we can have an oak tree.
I'm just
Well,
happy that you got to go hunting, Joe.
yeah,
Oh, that
that's
was fun. That was a good podcast. Ian does a good job.
yep. I like it a
yeah,
lot. Definitely learned a lot.
definitely.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen. So here's a handy option for you to get the podcast emailed to you each week. Just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list. And wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.